All right, everybody, welcome to the Almani Guys Podcast. This is episode 4 of the Almani Guys Podcast, recorded on November 11, 2012. It's about 9:30 right now. And my name is Kirk, and I'm here joined by Chow. What's going on, Chow?
Hey, what's up, guys? Doing good.
All right. Spencer, how's it going, man?
I'm good. Glad to be back.
I know. I was skipping episodes like every other episode or something. And also, Tom is joining us again. What's up, Tom?
Hey, what's up? Me and Spencer are in the same episode now, so we're actually not the same person.
Oh, snap. I had my doubts. Our special guest today is Jason. What's going on, Jason?
Hey, what's up, podcast world? Nice to meet you all.
Oh, man. Jason has the best mic out of all of us. What the heck?
Super sexy voice.
He's a professional podcaster.
I got the studio mic up in this place.
Oh, my goodness. All right, we got a lot of show for you tonight. What do we have? Some news in political news, so election results.
Top 30.
Mike Brown, news in sports. What else we got? Oh, we're going to talk about the Razer mouse. There's some things we got to clear up with that, I guess. And then later on, we got some board games talk, the return of Tom. And I guess Tom is talking about Mass Effect, his favorite game of all time. And Jason's going to talk about some... Oh, shit. hang on. After that, I'm going to talk about some tech news, and we're going to do it all under 30 minutes, all right? That's the goal. 30 minutes.
Like always.
All right, let's get started. We want to beat the clock. Election results. All right, so what's going on in California, Chow?
California? Well, how about we start off with the United States first, the most important election news?
Nah, not important.
No?
Okay. We changed presidents. We still have the same president.
All right, well, there's a couple of important props for us SoCalers. First off the bat, we have the Proposition 30. Apparently, it passed. That's a proposition that basically will increase taxes for education funds. So there's going to be no furloughs this year or for the upcoming years. And also that's going to go toward funding just towards schools, I guess K through 12, and also the California General Fund as well.
So where does the funding come from? Like taxes?
I believe so. Yeah, I think it's a tax that encompasses. Pretty much every resident. So I guess out of the two type of tax raises that you can increase that people would go for I would be safe to say education and transit, right? Like road construction. Those would be two that everyone uses or it affects everyone, right?
Yeah, you think that.
So what's going on, Tom?
Even if you don't drive, you have to take the bus, right?
Yeah. But, you know, year after year, the people in Congress keep cutting or like denying those budget proposals from going through just because they don't want tax increases for the wealthy.
So infrastructure is suffering or what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, in California in general, propositions are kind of interesting because we're one of the few states that actually lets the laws get changed so easily. Year after year, the proposition.
Every 2 years, it seems like there's like, 15 props?
Right. So it's actually pretty interesting because one of the bad effects of letting us do that is that our property taxes are so low, which means that, you know, a few years back, you know, they voted, or everybody voted, that property taxes would be limited and not increase with inflation, I think. So, which that means that now California is, you know, billions of dollars in debt because they're not collecting those property taxes. It's actually quite interesting because in giving us that much power, we actually screwed ourselves years after.
That's interesting.
So yeah, it is a little ridiculous that we can just swing the taxes every 2 years. It seems like Every time there's something new passing or something new that we're paying extra for, right?
Hmm.
All right. Well, didn't they just start, like, I don't know that Amazon started taxing their purchases in California. Like, would that help out?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Amazon, as you know, has always gotten away with not charging taxes because they keep saying that, you know, they don't really hold an office. They are not really located in California. And the current laws state that, you know, people that have businesses in the state that you're purchasing goods from, you have to get charged sales tax on those. So Amazon's always, you know, played around with the language of the website and, you know, playing around with the law saying that they don't have to get charged sales tax. And that was a pretty big differentiator for a lot of people, you know, right? You either, you know, go buy in the store or go pay no taxes on Amazon and sometimes get free shipping. So now that, you know, people have to get charged taxes, maybe it's a look, you know, it might be more, you know, people would just rather just go to the store and just buy it because they're going to have to pay sales tax anyway.
I don't know. I mean, things are just relatively cheaper on Amazon, I feel like, even with the tax. I mean,
that's true.
Compared to Best Buy or some big office,
that's true.
Or big box, yeah. Store. All right. Spencer, what do you think? Prop 30, good thing, bad thing?
I don't know. Let me see. I think it's good. It should help us out. I mean, raising taxes will help with our deficit and all.
Interesting. Jason?
When I was reading through the Prop 30, like, there's a lot of things that they stipulate, though, that I feel like is helping the small guy, the middle income people, because like, it affects anyone over $250,000 income. So like, basically like the 1% that is like, and it gets progressive, basically. Like, if you're making more than $250,000 a year, then you're getting charged 10%. If you're over $300,000, then it's 11%. And gotcha. if you're over $1 million, then you're at 13.3%.
Yeah, but remember, in a progressive system, it's whatever amount you make past the cutoff mark is taxed at the higher rate. Everything you make,
right? Below. Not your entire income.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, if you're a million, let's say you're at 2 million, the other only 1 million of that will be charged at the 13%
tax. Right.
Like, and then also they also increase the sales tax, which like most people probably would not notice.
Yeah, if it's like 0.5%, most people don't even notice.
Oh, it's 0.25% this time. It's 0.5, yeah. But like,
it's one of those things, right? With the sales tax, like, well, once it's higher, what are you gonna do? Not buy stuff, so
right.
Okay, let's move on. What's Prop B? What's that all about, Chow? All
right, so Prop B, pretty controversial thing on the ballot this year. It's basically a lot of regulation on the porn industry. So one thing, this can be like monthly drug testing for HIV, and also mandatory condom usage on porn sets as well. So. The bad thing about it is that it's going to cost a lot of money to regulate and to oversee it. The good thing is that, you know, you're talking about public health well-being, so you're talking about maybe less chances of diseases and HIV being spread for the public. So very, very hotly contested, but it looks like it passed. And a lot of the porn industry, they're going to probably have to get away from in LA County to avoid having to deal with all the red tape.
Right. What do you think, Tom?
It's interesting. I wonder how much we actually tax people who make porn. So if they don't make porn here, does that mean that we collect less taxes overall?
Yeah, that's one of the cases against the proposition.
Right.
There's going to be, you know, it's a pretty big industry, especially in the San Fernando Valley. That's kind of like the hotspot.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I heard they were all going to move to, or I guess they were threatening to move to Nevada or something with less strict laws regulating.
Yeah, I don't think anybody watches porn for the locale.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. It's just kind of weird that we're imposing such a regulation. I'm not a huge fan of like government regulation in the first place, but
right.
I don't know, this concept just seems really interesting to me. Like, what are you going to have, like, an agent, like, on the level of, like, a TSA agent kind of going around sets and, hey, are you using a condom? You know?
Right, random spot checks. That would be interesting. I think it's a little bit hard to regulate, so probably shouldn't have even made it to the ballot, just because, you know, how are you going to regulate it? Are you going to have, like, people disclose exactly where they're going to be doing porno shoots and having people show up, you know, as federal agents?
Right. Yeah, it's like prohibition, right? The whole logistics thing, like, how do you enforce it?
Right.
You know? Yeah. It's a good idea, you know, but practically, people are just going to get around it, either move or just do stuff under the table.
Yeah. What do you think, Spencer? You're for government regulation on porn industry?
I don't think so. everybody's moving out of California then to start filming everything then.
Mm, yeah. Right? And where's our tax money?
Yeah. You know? If you're in favor of socialism and all, like Tom, you know, where are we going to get our taxes? I'm just kidding. Oh man, what do you think, Jason?
I think it's just kind of bullshit that they're letting something like this pass, because it's freedom of rights, basically. It's like they can do whatever they want. Like they know they're risking their lives when they are having sex without protection. That it is a risk of their job, of their profession.
Workers' and, comp.
Yeah. Well, they have their own. Like, if they have workers' comp, then they get workers' comp. You know, but like the state's not paying for it, and like, you know, we're not. They're just trying to make a living, and why are we making it so hard for them?
I guess the biggest concern that it was kind of half convincing to me, where they were saying how, yeah, it's going to spread to the general public, I guess, because I guess porn stars have a lot of sex with the general public, or what? I don't get it. Like the civilians of the world are banging porn stars and getting diseases and then spreading it among other civilians of the world.
I mean, I get that concern. You know, you don't want people dying from, you know, syphilis or whatever. But I mean, logistically, it just doesn't work. So it's kind of a moot point to kind of debate it. It's really hard to regulate, so why even bother?
In 2 years, you know, right? It'll all change
two
again.
2 years.
It also goes back to the industry. Like, if everyone is, like, infected with AIDS, per se, like, you're pretty much out of a job.
This isn't happening. Like, right. Statistically speaking, they have really, you know, low STD transmission rates. I was reading an article and it seemed really low and almost unbelievable. I'm like, really?
Yeah. Porn stars regularly get tested before they even go on set.
Yeah.
It's like porn stars are probably cleaner than the normal person.
Yeah, it's pretty well self-regulated, I think, at this point. So it's kind of redundant.
Whoa. Tom, not in favor of regulation?
Well, only when it's pragmatic, but in this case, it's not.
Nah. All right, let's move on to some sports news. Chow, take it away.
Okay, so big news this past weekend, I guess on Friday in the morning, Mike Brown, after coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, after five games, axed. So they got off to a 1-4 start, winless in the preseason. He got fired in the morning. Lakers are now on a coaching hunt. You know, I remember talking 2 weeks ago saying, hey, the Lakers are very top heavy. They have a lot of stars on their team now. I expect a deep playoff run. And getting off to such a slow start, they were getting blown out by teams by like 20 points that were not even going to make the playoffs. So I guess Laker management, Jerry Buss decided to make a change. The top two coaching prospects available right now that are not working, Phil Jackson, ex-Laker coach, 11 championship rings. Also, on doc, Mike D'Antoni, ex-Nick and ex-Suns coach, ex-coach of Steve Nash. So, pretty exciting time for the Lakers, because after they fired Brown, they won back-to-back games. They beat, on Friday, they beat Golden State, and then tonight they beat Sacramento pretty convincingly. So, looks like just with the coaching change and with the interim coach, they're already doing a lot better already. So, I'm pretty excited, being a big Lakers fan, that they could start playing up to their potential. And if they can get a top coach like Phil Jackson or D'Antoni, I think that they'll be set up for a good run this year.
Very nice. All right. I guess that's that. I mean, any further discussions?
Jason, I know that you love to talk basketball. In your opinion, what do you think? Do you think it was a fair firing? And who do you want to see as the next coach?
I mean, you don't go 0-8 and then go 1-4 and not expect to get canned. that's the bottom line. Like, as for like the future coach, I'm a big fan of Phil Jackson coming back. It's just for me, like, he retired because he was getting old and he couldn't handle the pressure of being the head coach anymore. And now we're talking about bringing him back. is he gonna be capable of going into that deep run where we were playing almost 100 games every year, basically?
Well, he did get about a year and a half off, so he was able to recuperate, relax, vacation. He basically took an extended vacation. So yeah. He's able to write his book. So he has a lot of time. He had a lot of time to recharge. The last time he came back from 1 year off, you know, they made the playoffs the next 2 years. The following year, they made the finals. So immediately, you know, just with him being on the team, he made a change. They went from basically being a 500 team to like a playoff team, and then after that, a contender. So, and that's with like not even great players. We're talking about some of the best players in the league. Dwight Howard, the best center. Steve Nash, top 5-point guard. Kobe and Gasol are still good. So there's talent here. And you know Phil Jackson, he loves to play with top-heavy talent.
Of course. I mean, I have no doubt in Phil Jackson's abilities. He's already won 11 rings. It's just that I bring in the question his age. He's 67. He's not getting younger, you know?
Yeah, he's definitely old.
Is it fair to ask of him to come back?
I mean, I think it's fair. I mean, you know, they'll probably just throw a bunch of money at him and eventually get to a certain point where he's like, okay, I'll go because, you know, you're paying me, you know, ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah, his last contract was $10 million, so maybe he's looking at a ballpark of between $10 and $15 million in ownership and also GM abilities. Like, that's a lot of power that you're getting with Harrison.
Hmm.
It's also the
plus
fact
he's dating Joe Jason.
There's also the fact that he wants to be like, I tried to get 12 and he couldn't, and he ended his career on a bad note. He wanted to go off, like riding off into the sunset. I won 12, you know. I did basically 4 3-peats. There's no other coach like after me that could possibly do this. If they do, this could be even better, you know.
Right.
So he wanted his basically ride off into the sunset. Then I think this is what he's going for right now.
Right. I think if he's fired up for it, then, you know, by all means, he should come back. But if he, you know, if he's too weak, too frail, too old.
Yeah, if he's just doing it for a paycheck, maybe a bad idea. But if he's like, I want to do this because I still have a lust for the NBA, then hey, bring him aboard. But if not, then D'Antoni, he's very capable, especially offensively.
Nice. Zen Master. Hopefully makes a return. All right, let's move on. We got a Razer Naga Mouse news. All right, what's this all about, Chad?
Okay, so this is kind of a crazy story. I didn't really believe it when I first saw it on the newsfeed on, I think, on CNET. But basically, this is the breakdown. Razer, they have a new Naga Mouse. It's like a gaming-style mouse that has a lot of programmables and proxies and things like that. And it requires you to register online. It has DRM built in into the mouse, the hardware, for you to be able to use any of the settings. So if you want to adjust sensitivity, scroll wheel, buttons, programmables, you have to be online. You have to register, mm-hmm. and you have to be online to be able to use any of those functions. So if your internet's down or it's not working or whatever, all you can use it is for pointing and clicking, and that's it. So you're paying, like, I don't know how much this mouse is, but let's say, I think it's like $80 to $100. Paying a lot of money for this mouse. And they're kind of putting this unnecessary restriction on your usability. I understand that they're trying to go toward the cloud, like, oh, you can go anywhere, your settings are there. But, hey, why don't you have an offline mode? How hard it would be to just make an offline mode if you just don't feel like registering, right?
Yeah. But is that the first time?
Like you this is the first time. This is the first time this has ever happened in terms of like.
No. I mean, like, you just got to register once, and then you can use it offline.
I believe. It's a one time registration, but you shouldn't even get to that point, because you know how many times has you know you just like oh I want to play this thing offline or I want to let's say you have a power outage or just you know you switch providers or your internet's down, mm-hmm. then you're kind of screwed, right?
Well, how this issue came about was that it came out and, you know, Hurricane Sandy hit, and then Razer's servers went down, and then people tried to register their mice, and it couldn't register because the servers were down, so they couldn't use their mouse. That's why it's a big issue, because it came out, people tried to sign up for it, it couldn't because the servers were down, and now it's a big deal. Yeah. So if, you know, if it was just regular, maybe it wouldn't be such a big story. But just because it just so happened that it came out during
bad
the time
timing,
when
huh?
it couldn't. Yeah, it was just bad timing, and so now it's a even bigger news than it probably would have been. I mean, it's still pretty, you know, fairly big news because it's kind of stupid.
Right. Okay. Well, what do you think, Spencer?
Yeah, I know. That really sucks. It's like all these personalized features that they offer, and right when it comes out, coincidentally, this happens and the servers are down for... it's already been how long? 2 weeks? 3 weeks? And people are still trying to register?
Right, and this is like, you know, an $80 mouse that you paid for all these features, and you can't use it. All you can use it for is like a regular mouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, that'll pass though, right?
It will. It will. It's not that big of a deal if this whole thing didn't happen. But, you know, I mean, there's really no reason why they need to put all your settings into the cloud. I mean, it's not like you're going to pick up somebody else's mouse, exact same mouse, and then be like, oh, I'm going to import all my profile information on here. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes no sense.
Well, what do you think, Jason? I know you were reading this earlier.
I mean, it's just dumb. Why would you? This is hardware. You went out and bought hardware, and like you can't use it right away. It kind of hurts. Like,
right?
You just bought, you know, you spent $100, and like now you can't use the whole thing. Like,
yeah.
Like it's pointless to me. Like, why did this happen? I mean, they should just came with the offline one right away. There shouldn't be DRM, and there should be that bullshit. Like,
right?
You're hurting your company that way, and you'll lose a lot of customers very quickly. Like, if you're a pro gamer, and then like the server is down, oh, I had to play a tournament, and you know this is my livelihood. I'm a professional gamer. You know, like I'm at BlizzCon. There is no internet. They have LAN connections only to keep players from cheating, basically.
Right.
So now you can't access a server. You can't access your settings, and you can't set your mouse because you're not online. So what are you gonna do now? You should probably go get a new mouse, right? That doesn't have these problems. And they also lose their endorsement from those players, which is what Razer is like really good at. They get the professional players on board to promote their product. And all the other people who aspire to be like them get their products. That's a very smart way of marketing, right? And then they lose that. And now you're just losing you're just bringing your marketing down. It hurts them a lot.
I feel like, I saw a YouTube clip or a YouTube video specifically on this earlier. And then, I don't know, I didn't really get the concept, but it seemed like there was a misunderstanding of some sort. So, I don't know, we're all kind of discussing this side of the aspect, but I'm sure there's, like, another side of it that we're not seeing, or at least we're not reading from all the sites that have this news reported. But I don't know, I'll get back to you guys on that, maybe throw it in the next show or something like that. But I'm sure it's not that bad, honestly.
Well, it's yeah, like I said, it's not that big of a deal unless, you know, it just so happens that the time that you want to set up your mouse, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're just left with $80 of a mouse that you could have gotten for like that.
Well, like Tom was saying, the whole thing with the Hurricane Sandy, like, hey, that's kind of bad timing, right?
Yeah, it's bad timing, but it's also something that could happen later on, even without a hurricane. Like, if their servers go down, you can't use your mouse.
Yeah, like, well, there's an offline mode on it, but that shouldn't even be a problem in the first place. Like,
you have to register first, right?
Yeah, you have to register first, but, like let's say you got your setup, but, like, let's say you want to use the hardware on, like, a different system, you know, that's part of the cloud saving. So you'll need to go on the cloud to grab your settings once you use a different computer.
Right. I can understand that. Let's say, you know, you're playing on a different computer and you just want to bring your mouse, but you don't want to reprogram the whole thing all over again. That makes sense. So what they could have done was, you know, just let it be set up offline, and then you can just upload your settings online, and that's it.
Or just put it on a USB stick. How about that?
Right. So, you know, instead of making you register to use your product in the first place, might as well just let you use your product, and then you can have the option of uploading.
Yeah, if it was like, oh, you can upload your settings online, like kind of like PlayStation Plus, that's pretty cool. But when you make it mandatory, it's like if I had a PlayStation 3 and I was like, I want to save this game. Oh, you have to be online to save it. That would be kind of ridiculous, right?
Right. Like, the first time you want to save it, you have to be online. And after that, you could save it offline.
Can't they just save the settings onto the mouse? Like,
yeah.
Put some storage in the mouse.
No, yeah, they do. But then for some reason, like, the way they did it was, in order to use your mouse, you have to register online first.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense because the mouse is an offline device.
So you just got to wait until their servers come back, and then you no longer have an $80 mouse that just points and clicks, right? You then have full Razer capabilities.
Yeah, the main thing with the mouse is that, like, the last time you went to Best Buy or Fry's to buy a mouse curve, how long did it take you to set up your mouse? Like, what, 5 seconds?
Yeah, pretty much.
This conversation has gone for like 5 minutes. So. That's the main problem. There's simplicity.
Right.
Well, but yeah, you're buying a Razer mouse with all the mapping and stuff. Obviously, it's not going to take a second to just plug. You got to map all your keys.
Yeah, but then it shouldn't take you 5 minutes to even get to that step.
Right. Well, but that's just because of the unfortunate timing, isn't it?
Right. But yeah. It kind of is. So, like I said, it's a bigger issue now because, you know, people weren't able to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think people are blowing it out of proportion. It's not like your device is now not functional, like, forever. You just gotta wait until the servers come back.
Right. Well,
for some people, that's too long of a wait.
Oh my goodness.
They're gonna just return it and then buy something else.
This is America, guys.
I read an article, like, 2 days ago on Verge, where they said that they did a study that people would actually, their patience is so low nowadays that if after 2 seconds your YouTube doesn't load, they just give up. They just leave the page.
2 seconds, guys.
That sounds about right.
And proportionally, if the higher your network speeds are, like, let's say you have cable or fiber optics, the less time you're actually willing to wait.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, because you expect it to load. Then you would think, something's wrong with the page, so you click off of it. It's like that one, what's that one story? Like, if you had a lighter that lights every single time that you flick it, and then the first time it doesn't light, you just throw it away. Because you think, it lit every single time, right?
Right.
It's kind of like that, I guess. I mean, does this fall under the first world problem category?
Definitely.
This is like huge, right?
Yeah.
First world problem.
This is a fine example of a first world problem right here.
Oh my goodness. All right, let's move on. All right, Tom, what do you got for us? Board games.
All right. So this time I'm going to bring you guys an intermediate level board game. Last time I talked about King of Tokyo. It's kind of beginner level. It's pretty easy to learn, quite fun to play. But let's say you've been playing for a little while or other basic games, you're like, oh, I want to move up a little bit. So here's the game that you should move on to. It's called Seven Wonders. Seven Wonders is a game where each of you take control of a civilization, and the objective is to be the best civilization. And to do that, you have to earn victory points. And you earn victory points by building various buildings and gathering various resources to give you points. What's interesting about this game is that a lot of games, that a lot of more advanced games take a long time just because everybody takes their turns one after the other. So you go and then everybody else at the table goes and then you go again. So the downtime on those games is actually pretty long because you're waiting for all these people to take their turns. Seven Wonders is a little bit more different in that everybody takes their turns at the same time. And they do that with this mechanic called drafting. Drafting is this mechanic where everybody gets dealt the same number of cards. You choose one and you pass the rest to either the person on your left or the person on your right. And everybody does this at the exact same time. So each of your turns is only depending on whoever is the slowest. So compare that with, you know, everybody else taking their turns, downtime is a lot shorter. So in picking these cards, you gain various things like resources, like natural resources or money, or you can pick buildings that do various things that affect, you know, how much money you get or what kind of resources you get or how many victory points you get at the end of the game. And it's actually quite interesting because there's a lot of strategy involved in the game. And depending on the cards that you pick, you can either, you know, fight other people, get victory points that way. You can immerse yourself in science, make your civilization really good in science and earn a lot of points that way. Or just build a lot of civics buildings, you know, like, you know, town halls, and just get straight victory points. So there's a lot of different ways to win. It's a little bit more difficult to learn just because there's so many different cards and they do so many different things. But what I found is that most people understand how the game is played within two or three turns. And by the end of the first game or two, they have already got a pretty good idea of how to play the game. And then from that point on, it's just a matter of learning what all the cards do and kind of expecting, learning to expect what kind of cards will come up. So, you know, there's a lot of interesting things going on because, you know, you can choose cards that you can deny other people and or you can, you know, play cards that are beneficial to you. So there's a lot of things going on, but it's actually pretty easy to learn, and you definitely should play this game.
Very nice. What's your strategy of choice?
It really depends. One of the expansions is called Leaders, and it gives you a certain number of leaders that give you like different effects. Give you bonus points for maybe they'll give you bonus points for science buildings, or they'll give you bonus points for fighting other civilizations. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, when you choose these leaders, you kind of set your course depending for the rest of the game. So it really depends on what kind of leaders you get. And sometimes you get really good leaders that play along with each other really well. Like, let's say they all give you extra points for science. So for that game, you're just building as much science as you can.
Hmm. I remember we were playing with Brian, and he was, like, racking up the points with science. That's the green cards, right, or whatever?
Right. So with science cards, you can get a lot of points because each copy you get gets you quadratically more points. So if you have one green card, then it's 1 point. If you have two green cards that have the same symbol, that's 4 points. It's two square. And three, it's three squared, so it's nine. So it adds up pretty quickly.
So what can beat that? I mean, that sounds like a pretty good strategy.
It is, but, you know, it's pretty obvious what you're going for, and other people, you know, that go before you can deny you those cards, right?
Yeah, okay. I see.
Let's say I'm sitting next to Brian or you, and you're getting cards, right? I see that you're getting a lot of science, so I just start, you know, either discarding those cards, you know, or picking them for myself, or using them to, you know, to, like, you know, get myself money or something.
That's kind of interesting. I was gonna say that kind of play. I guess there are a lot of games like that, including Mahjong. I don't know if you remember, but you go for like one suit, right? So if you see the person sitting next to you, go for that suit. You start, you know, disrupting their draws and stuff. But that most of the time, though, I feel like that disrupts your own hand. How do you avoid? How do you still win if you're out to get somebody?
There is a balance. Sometimes you have to let, you know, somebody else get the cards that they want just because you have a card that you need to play. Mm-hmm.
You just can't do
it. Yeah, but it does, you know, disrupting other players isn't exactly how you win all the time. You know,
troll everybody.
Yeah, and sometimes it doesn't even matter if they get the cards that they want because later on you can play these purple cards that neighbors. So maybe if you get the right purple card, you can get points from your neighbors. Like, got me points for every green card that Brian had, and that means I would get a bunch of points.
You gotta be pretty unlucky then. I mean, to get that green card or whatever card, purple card.
Yeah. Purple, yeah. There's a little bit of randomness involved, but you know. once everyone kind of knows how to play the game goes takes about half an hour, 45 minutes. So you can complete a game pretty quickly, and most of the time you just want to play another one. So, you know, try to take back the crown.
Who here has played this? I know I have.
I have. I've played it a handful of times.
Yeah. How'd you like it?
I know.
It was a little confusing at first because there's a lot of symbols.
All right.
And you'd have to use the book to try and figure out what it's trying to tell you. But after one round, I basically understood most of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing interesting about it because it's a little bit, a lot of stuff to digest, but, you know, it's actually pretty easy once you get around to it. You know, you either stick to a certain number, a certain color, or you try to, you know, build one of each, or, you know, try to diversify that way.
How many players?
Play up to 7 normally. With the expansions, you can actually do.
Up to 7. You're cutting in and out, Tom. I don't know what's going on.
Who knows?
Like I said, it's like 7 players, and with expansions, you can actually play with 8.
8, okay. All right, let's we can move on from here. Oh wait, price?
I think it's about $30. I think are $30 each, so it's fairly affordable. I mean, you can play with a lot of people, so
$30. You know. Huh?
Tom, availability?
It's actually available. It's not like
Kings of Tokyo or whatever.
Yeah, you can.
Do I have to like find like a random guy like on Craigslist or something or eBay?
All right, let's move on. Hopefully Tom's connection gets better. I guess it's just me or something. But let's talk about, we got another Tom segment. Mass Effect Trilogy, what's going on here?
Yeah, you have to play Mass Effect. You know, okay. Or Xbox, MP3, right?
You're cutting in and out real bad. Is anybody else hearing Tom?
I can't. It's pretty choppy. It's pretty choppy.
Yeah, it's choppy.
Let's. You know what?
Hey Tom.
Let's move on to Jason's StarCraft.
And then maybe then we'll just exit out of Skype.
Sorry about that. All right, Jason. What's going on with StarCraft? What's Heart of the Swarm beta?
All right. So, if you guys haven't heard, the Heart of the Swarm beta has officially started. They're in like the private section right now. So like they're sending out like basically personal invites. Like if you know a developer or like even a friend of a friend, they'll probably hook you up with a StarCraft beta. I've been playing it. It's pretty fun. It is multiplayer only, so you can't see any of the stuff that most casual players like me. You don't get to see any of the story. You don't get to do any of the fun stuff like the side quests and stuff or like the custom games. Mm-hmm. But definitely you get a taste of like where they're going with the game, multiplayer wise. You get the taste of the brand new units that are gonna be official in the game. Mm-hmm. Like Terrans get being like bleeped out right now.
Okay. I think people are chatting.
Yeah. But Terrans they got three new units. The Hellbat, the Widowmind, and the Warhound. Mm. The Warhound that actually currently got removed because it was way too overpowered. It was this like big ass mech that basically like all the players did was like they basically built everything as quick as they can towards the Warhound and just massed them out, and no one could beat it. It was like unbeatable strike.
That sounds like a beta to me.
So these units
overpowered?
Extremely overpowered units, and like, you know, the point of the beta basically is find something overpowered and abuse the living hell of it and make people mad and enjoy it while you can.
Because they're gonna change it.
They're gonna change it. So like with the Zerg, they got the Swarm Host and the Viper and like some other like smaller changes. Oh, then the Ultras also have a charge ability similar to the Zealot. So in the game you see these Ultras that like are like these big like tanking units that are charging at you like a freaking zealot, and the zealot's like, you know, this tiny, well, I wouldn't say tiny, like a medium-sized Protoss unit, right? He's like, he looks like a guy, and you get this monster doing the same thing to you. It's ridiculous.
Nice. So it's super fun, or what's going on?
The beta is fun. Definitely for fun. You don't get any of the you don't get any score. There's no pride.
It's
I guess
playground.
Yeah, this is a playground. Everyone's just finding things to abuse.
Jason, is it like the Wings of Liberty beta where you can still play against computer and things like that?
Oh yeah, yeah. But when you're playing against the computer, it's actually not that fun. You only get to play against the easy computer. So like,
oh, lame.
Pretty much, if you're playing against a computer, it is like boring. Like, you can pretty like the only reason you're gonna play against the computer is so you can figure out how to abuse these new units.
Oh, like the builders, basically, right?
Yeah. So, like, you know, you can do like hilarious stuff with, like, for example, with Protoss. Like, the Mothership Core is like a brand new unit where like it's supposed to be intended to use for base defense. A lot of players now are like, you know what? If we build it early enough, we can actually use it for base offense. So, like, you know, you see, like, people doing Mothership Core rushes. Like, there's, like, one of them. And, like, you can only build one. And, like, they'll sneak it behind a person's base and start wreaking havoc. And you're just watching these replays. It's hilarious.
Do you think that's something they're going to tone down for the
obviously.
Release?
Obviously.
No, they're going to keep it in.
Intended. Yeah, working as intended.
Maybe make it slower or, like, less powerful if it's outside your base.
Yeah. Yeah, no, most definitely they're going to make a lot of changes, and they might not change the Mothership Core at all and then buff the other units or buff or force it to be like longer built or like just make changes around the game.
Cost more.
Yeah, it's like there's a lot of ways around it, and it's not necessarily going to get nerfed. I think it's definitely a favorite unit. One thing that they actually brought back into the Heart of Swarm was the carrier. Everyone was like so sad the carrier got taken away. They actually brought that back. So those are just some of the things that they changed recently. As for the single player, in case like no one knows what's going on with the story, I think this is the thing that interests me the most about the Heart of the Swarm is the continuation of Sarah Kerrigan. And like her, by the way, this is a spoiler in case you haven't figured
I figured it would be a spoiler.
If you haven't played Wings of Liberty yet, you should get spoiled for this. Like, at the end of Wings of Liberty, Sarah Kerrigan is no longer a Zerg, or is no longer the Queen of Blades. She loses most of her Zerg powers, basically. She's basically back to being a regular human ghost, which, by the way, is still ridiculous. But like she's not no longer like a god, so like in Heart of the Swarm, basically it's the story of her trying to get back her power, what it looks like, and so like they haven't released like what exactly the storyline is, but you're basically playing as Zerg and you're going and you see like pictures are you're upgrading Sarah Kerrigan as a ghost, but she's getting like Zerg attachments to it, so it's really awesome.
So, Jason, everything sounds pretty good. When can we get this for public beta? When is it coming out for public beta?
With Blizzard, I have no idea. I don't think they're going to actually do a public beta. They never usually do. Like you actually have to be hooked up with it, or usually go to BlizzCon. That's usually right. Like how you get a public quote unquote beta, because like they never do a public beta. They always do like a private one.
What's the release date as of right now?
Is it
just 2013 period?
I think 2013 period with Blizzard.
I heard Danny was talking about, he was on an investor call. He said first quarter of next year, so very soon.
Oh yeah, I did. Yeah, he did say something about that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's like 4 months from now. That's really soon.
Wow, yeah.
With Blizzard, you never know. It's like, if they find something they don't like, if it's not ready, there's no schedule. It's like, all
right, right.
Maybe, so you might see it in the summer, maybe. You might see it in spring. Hell, you might see it in the winter. I hope it comes out in winter.
Yeah, well, Blizzard's rich. They can you know, not have to release it right now.
Yeah, they just released like a lot of... Oh, isn't there like a Diablo expansion pack in the works, too? Anybody play Diablo 3?
I've,
I just played the demo.
I played a little bit, pretty good. And that was about it. Yeah.
Well, they got money makers out there.
I mean, they still got WoW.
WoW's still a big money maker for them.
Definitely. They also have just released the expansion for WoW, right? The Pandora.
Yeah, Mist of Pandaria.
Yeah,
it looks pretty fun. I don't know, but I don't think I want to get back into it. Oh, another game. What is it? Star Wars went free to play, I think, right?
Just recently. I don't know if it has went free to play yet.
I thought it did, like really recently, like Monday or maybe tomorrow or something like that. Whatever. Probably. But it's very soon, if not if it hasn't happened yet.
Well, I'd imagine I get like an email about it. I mean, I got an email about, you know, me getting stuff if I subscribe again, but I was like, eh.
You're over it. Remember you were hyping that game so much, Tom?
No, it was good. I mean, it's just that I don't think I have that much time to, you know, actually pay monthly to play the rest of the storylines. If I actually had time, I would.
But it's going to be free to play. Are you going to play then?
I think so, yeah. Hmm. Which means, because, you know, I won't have to, you know, pay monthly. I don't have to justify, you know, me having to play it in order to get my money's worth.
This is true.
Well, hey, Tom, since we're talking about games, you want to just do real quick on Mass Effect Trilogy?
Yeah.
Oh, you stole my transition, Chow. I was going to talk about BioWare. Speaking of BioWare.
Oh, yeah. it's pretty good. Yeah, BioWare makes Mass Effect, and Mass Effect is basically their science fiction take on what's going to happen in the future. And it's actually really cool. You know, you take command of a guy named Shepard. He kind of be female or male. Mine is female because, you know, female are more kick-ass in video games.
Plus, it's much cooking.
Yeah, it's nice. It's much cooler, you know. And plus, the voice actor for the female, I think, is much better than the voice acting for the male Shepard. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's that. It's interesting because everything is voiced. When you talk to other people, they respond. And you can actually, in the later games, you can actually interrupt them and do, you know, what they call Renegade and Paragon interrupts. And you can actually play three different ways, actually. You can either go, you know, full Renegade, which is like, you'll get it done no matter, you know, who dies or whatever it takes. You don't really care about
the means.
Right. And then there's the Paragon way where you're like, well, you know, I got to do it in the right way where, you know, the right people get rewarded for, you know, trying to survive in the back. And then you can play the narrow way, the neutral way where you just, you know, take a little bit of both. So it's interesting. I mean, it's been three episodes or three games, and now the whole trilogy is coming out for the Xbox and the PC. It's already out. Last I heard, the PS3 version actually got pushed back to December, and is actually not coming out to the Wii U. Though Mass Effect 3 is coming out to the Wii U, but not the entire trilogy. Anyway, play the whole thing. You should play it from beginning to end. Your Shepard in the beginning gets transported into Shepard number 2, and the Shepard that you play for number 2 gets transported to number 3. And all of your choices carry over. And then by the end of the third one, you have all these relationships with all these people, and you start to care about, you know, what happens to all these people. People die along the way. You have to make decisions. So it's actually really cool.
These are three separate games, right?
Yeah, these are three separate games.
Wow, that's really in-depth. I don't follow Mass Effect. So I didn't know, like, whatever, like, so your choices from the first game, like, so these, like, games, I'm assuming, are released, like, years apart, right?
Yeah, the first one was released, like, I think 6 years ago, if my memory serves correctly. So, yeah, you know, if people die in Mass Effect 1, they're dead in Mass Effect 2. They stay dead. And then if people die in Mass Effect 2, and people can and will die in Mass Effect 2, then they stay dead in Mass Effect 3. So, if, you know, yeah.
So, like, if, like, for example, like, two people can play two separate games, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. So, your conversations with your friends essentially become what happens in your stories. You know, I chose to save this person, and the other person chose to save another person. And that has impact on, you know, the rest of the game going forward.
So essentially, like, you can actually replay, the replay value of these games is, like, really big now, because, like, if you did something in the first game where, like, you didn't realize, like, for example, like, oh, I decided to steal this pencil, Right. And then, like, you know, down to, like, the third game, like, because you stole this pencil, this entire planet dies. So you're like, why did I do that?
You can actually cut yourself off from options in the third game if you choose to do things in the first two games.
Say again?
You can actually cut yourself off from decisions in the third game if you chose to do things in the first and second game.
Oh, so you can actually, like adjust the decisions? Like, they give you options before you start the game, basically?
Like, I'm just saying that if you choose to do something, like you said, in the first and second games, then there might be not because you chose.
How much is this game, Tom?
Trilogy is about $60.
You're cutting out again, Tom.
The Xbox is about $60.
Okay. Well, let's just move on from here, I guess. I don't know, you might need to re-log again, Tom, or something. But I guess this is the portion where I'm supposed to talk about Straight Talk and Windows 8. I'm going to save Straight Talk for another time because we're already approaching our... Oh, crap, we're way over 30 minutes. So let me just talk about my brief experience with Windows 8 so far. I want to like it. I really want to like the, you know, the Metro or whatever they're calling it, the Tile UI. But I'm not in it most of the time. So most of the time I'm looking at the desktop mode, which looks just like Windows 7. So from my point of view, why did I buy this for $40, you know? Or it was a deal. It was like $70 with an Amazon card or something, $30. But I don't know. I really haven't tapped into the full Windows 8 experience because I feel like you need to be on a tablet for that. And I don't have a tablet. I just have a desktop. And it's kind of annoying because there's no more windows when you're in that tile mode. Like, you can... Okay, here's something that I do often that I can't really do. So I'll have, like, a YouTube clip open, and then meanwhile, in another window, I'm, like, browsing Reddit or something like that. Well, I can't do that in the you know, Metro UI, whatever UI they call it now, because it's just one window, and it's just that one Chrome window. You can have different tabs within Chrome, obviously, but I just want to view two tabs at the same time. You can't do that. So that's kind of annoying.
You can't do like Windows 7 snap feature, basically.
You can do that in the desktop mode, but that's kind of pointless if you want to stay. I mean, the whole point of Windows 8, I thought, was to keep you in this new, you know, UI, but I'm constantly going back into the desktop mode where I'm just like, okay, this is just like Windows 7 right now. So why did I buy Windows 8?
Right.
Kirk, are there like performance increases when you're in the desktop mode on Windows 8 compared to 7?
I don't know about in the desktop mode, but startup and shutdown, it feels faster. I have an SSD, so it's even way more faster than I bet on a regular hard drive. I do miss the start menu a little bit because sometimes I'm looking for an app or something and you can't, you know, just push your start button and then type. There are some shortcuts that I just haven't really figured out or something, but
it's still there, right? It's just invisible, right? The start menu.
Another thing, this is kind of silly, but I don't like not having the clock there because the clock is usually on your taskbar, right? But if you don't have a taskbar, you don't have a clock. You see what I'm saying?
I thought it was like in the upper right or something that the time was always there.
I don't see. Maybe I haven't enabled it, but the only way I see it is if I move my mouse all the way over to the right, and then I move it down slightly, and then a little clock shows up in the day. So I don't know. It's kind of annoying.
That's right. Yeah, that was kind of the concerns I had with Windows 8 because they were trying to push two different kind of usage cases at you, right? You have, you know, your regular desktop, and then you have your tablet Windows desktop. So, you know, having to jump back between both of them was kind of always kind of strange to me.
Right. In short, I wouldn't get it, honestly. If I did it all over again, I don't think I would have got it. Maybe I need a fresh install or something. Save your money for now. If you're happy with Windows 7, then stay with Windows 7. You know, right. Easy as that. If you want to experience something new and you have a tablet, like I'm sure this will run way better on a Surface or something. Or some right. sort of, what do you call those, convertible laptop thingies?
Yeah, well, but then the issue with, you know, like tablet slash convertibles is that now when you have to jump back into desktop mode, it's weird because, you know, everything, all the buttons are kind of small.
Yeah. I haven't experienced, this is all speculation. I've only experienced this on the desktop, so I can say definitively that my opinion, it's not worth getting. I'm sure there are a lot of people that disagree. Maybe Jimmy. I don't know if he's listening.
I think Jimmy would be like, blasphemy.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the market.
Jimmy's all Bill about Gates. The Windows Mobile now.
I am looking forward to the Lumia 920, though. So, but probably not going to get it. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, that's another discussion.
Off contract, Kirk, only $450.
Not bad.
No, that's not terrible.
Not bad at all.
That's really good. That's very competitive.
That's really good.
So maybe I will get it. Holy crap. Maybe. I mean, it's either that or a Nexus 4, but whatever. Yeah. All right, I think we can end this, man. We are pushing it. Let's do the app of the week. Chao, was that yours?
I'll do that real quick. So just the app of the week, a new app I was able to check out on the Android marketplace, I guess the Play Store. It's Juice Defender. It's a Juice Defender app. So basically it's an application that just helps you conserve battery life. You get a lot more juice out of your battery. I'm probably getting at least, I don't know, anywhere between 90 minutes to, I'm getting anywhere between an hour and a half to 3 hours more battery life just being on like Wi-Fi or 3G data. Okay. It basically just optimizes your battery and your OS so that you're not using stuff that you shouldn't be using. So, like, let's say you only use like Google Plus and Facebook and text messaging and voice, and that's it. It's all the other stuff is going to be turned off. When your phone's idling, like on a lock screen, it'll just shut off all your data. Like, basically, you'll be in airplane mode when you're not using your phone. Like, there's also like a sleep mode where if you're sleeping, if it knows that you're sleeping, everything, your phone's just turned off. So when you turn your phone back on, you know, let's say you sleep for 8 hours, you only lose like a couple percent battery. So it's really good. I definitely recommend it to have it if you have Android, because especially Android, there's a lot of people have problems with battery life right. with all the multitasking. So definitely worth a pickup, and I'll put it in the show notes for you guys to check out. There's also a couple modes too. There's like a regular mode and aggressive mode. So make sure to do the aggressive mode. I seem to be getting a little bit better performance when you're on aggressive rather than normal mode.
Okay, very nice. Juice Defender, it's called, on the Play Store?
Juice Defender, yeah. Definitely check it out. I'm going to put it in the show notes.
Right on.
Yeah, when I read the name, I thought it was like a game where you had to defend your juice from other people.
Like tower probably defense. Why they named it that way. It is kind of like
Juice Defense.
Yes.
Spencer, you got anything?
Some food, drinks. Let's see, last week I went to King Taco. Everybody loves that place. And I tried... let's see, four different tacos.
Oh, the name of the podcast.
Your El Monte correspondent, Spencer.
Yes, the first taco I tried was the carne asada. Good, of course.
Obviously.
Another one was the carnitas.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lengua and the chicken.
Lengua is tongue, for those of you that don't know.
Oh, I love it, tongue. Man. Love lengua.
Yeah.
Spence, if I have like $5, which taco should I get? What's the best of the bunch here?
Of the four that I tried, I really enjoyed the lengua taco, actually.
Yes. Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's actually kind of funny. If you don't tell people that it's ox tongue, they actually really like it because it's, you know, it's really nice and chewy. But once you tell them that it's ox tongue, like, do not want.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're only $1.29 each.
Very nice.
Oh, nice.
Did it fill you up? Four tacos?
I had five, actually.
Oh,
nice. I had two lengua.
Nice. It was so good.
The most important question, though, is does King Taco have horchata?
Oh,
yes, definitely. Obviously. That's what I washed it down with.
Okay.
That was all right. Awesome.
That's all I wanted to know.
All right, very nice. Thank you, Spence. How about you, Jason? You got an app or anything you want to plug?
No, I don't at the current moment. I'm a big fan of Waze. I'm assuming a lot of people have heard of it already. I use it a lot, and it got me through San Diego, and it gets me through LA every day to work. Saves me about 10 minutes.
It's awesome. What it is a Kraus map app. So, you know, if there's like an accident coming up, other people have encountered it, they've talked about or posted about it, and then the program tells you, hey, avoid this area because there's an accident.
Dang. Okay, that's pretty nice.
It's available for Android, iPhone, and I think Windows Phone now. So it's, is everywhere.
All right. Nice.
How about BlackBerry, Jason? BlackBerry?
RIM forever. Love it.
Nice. No comment.
All right, Tom, how about you? You got anything?
Yeah, originally I had a Letterpress up here. Letterpress is a game that you can play on iOS. It's actually really interesting. It's kind of like Scrabble, but instead of getting points, you're claiming territory. So let's say you have a board. It's like 5x5, and you're playing words off that board. They don't have to be connected. You just have to play. You know, with the letters that you're giving, you try to play the letter a word, and each word that you play claims that tile as your own. And the point, the object of the game is by the end of the game, by the time all the tiles are claimed, to have more tiles claimed than the other person. In order to steal tiles from other people, you have to play words using their tiles. But if you surround one of your tiles with other tiles that you own, then that one becomes locked. And the only way to unlock it is to take out the surrounding tiles first. So there's a lot of back and forth. You know, games can go on for a long time because of the kinds of letters that you get. Like sometimes you can have, you know, a dozen or thousands of combinations of words. So you just keep playing words back and forth until, you know, somebody can't claim any more words or all the tiles are claimed. Or sometimes, you know, they're just there's only so many words, and or somebody's actually really good at the game. And, you know, ends really quickly, and usually with like a lopsided win. So it's interesting. It's free for iOS to play. I think you can have two games going on at the same time, and you can have two games in the history. And I think it's 99 cents to unlock, and you can just play, you know, as many games as you want. So it's a good app. The design is good, and you should definitely give it a shot if you're into, you know, competitive word games that you can play with your friends.
Tom, only for iOS?
I think it's only for iOS right now.
Boo.
Okay, cool. You gotta get something to the iOS people, right?
Yes, because they're the only people that will actually spend money.
Oh no, Windows apps are really, really expensive.
They're like $5.
I guess nobody buys those.
The user base is so small, so to justify porting it over,
They have to charge more. Right.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Supply and demand.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, I got an app for you guys. It's called Snapshot. Have you guys heard of this app?
No.
Okay.
Does it do?
Okay, so basically it's like a picture texting app, like an MMS app. But here's the... Oh, it's called Snapchat. I'm sorry, not Snapshot. Snapchat. And you take a picture, you send it to whoever, and it is only inexistent, like it'll delete itself after 10 seconds of viewing. So if you don't want history of whatever you're sending, this is the app you want to use. Okay, so you could take a picture, whatever you want, send it to whoever you want, they'll view it for only 10 seconds. I believe screenshotting is disabled during those 10 seconds, so you can't just take a screenshot of it. And then it's gone forever. No history.
And why do you use this a lot, Kirk?
No comment on my end, but I don't know. I don't know what you guys would use it for.
I don't know. I mean, sensitive materials, I suppose.
Yeah, sensitive materials. That's it.
What's interesting, though, is that it doesn't stop someone from taking a camera to your phone.
This is true, yeah. There's no way of policing that, I guess, right?
Yeah, I find it interesting that somebody actually go and make this app. It's quite interesting.
So I'll leave it up to you guys for thinking of uses.
Yes, but, if you're, that's perfect.
Yeah, it's for it's pretty nice. It it's for iOS and Android. It goes into your, I guess, your phone numbers, and then checks who has the app, and you can just add whoever who has it already.
Oh, nice.
And you can send them pictures that you don't want them to keep.
That's funny.
Yeah, get it, Tom. I'll send you a picture.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's it. Anything else? We're a little over on time.
Yeah.
I think we covered pretty much everything.
That's a pretty good note to end on, I think.
Very nice. That's
excellent.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me here. Ciao. Tom.
Sayonara. See you guys.
Spencer. All right. Jason. All right. And my name is
Kurt. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. Supersized podcast for you guys.
Yeah.
First and last.
Never coming on again. All right. Have a good night, guys. This is the Almani Guys podcast.
Thanks.
Night.